You're listening to the official podcast of TalesOfTheCon.com. Tales of the Con is a celebration of Comic Con culture with a punk rock spin. We built our website as a place to discuss our nerdiest and geekiest passions. It's all about video games, comic books, movies, TV shows, anime, and the conventions dedicated to them. By the nerds, for the nerds. If you like what we do, you can help support us by visiting our website and clicking the donation button. You can also use our Change Tip tip jar or use our Amazon affiliate link. If you bookmark that, it will take you to Amazon.com. We get credit for driving traffic and there's no additional cost on your order. In today's episode, we interviewed independent director Russ Emanuel. We met Russ at the Phoenix Fan Fest, where they were debuting the comic book tie-in to his award-winning film Occupants. We had a great time talking with Russ. Turns out he goes just as deep and nerdy as we do on movies, TV shows, fan theories, and more. So have a listen and check out his website, occupantsthemovie.com.
Does he have a thing to call in, or are we just going to call him?
We're calling him. I told him we'd call him. So I figure I'm going to put us online at this point.
10 minutes. Less than, actually. It's like 8. I have a serious pizza complex.
Pizza complex?
I've been eating pizza so much this fucking week. Yeah, some pizza shit. I've been eating so much fucking pizza. I got a free pizza coupon on my Domino's account the other night, right?
And
I
so were you scamming them?
No.
Were you like, free pizza coupon, and then the guy comes and he gives you the pizza, and then you're like, hey, free pizza coupon.
It's online, so you have to use the coupon. Damn.
Yeah, so I used the coupon or whatever, and I got, it's bacon, chicken, Philly cheese.
That's a good call.
And then I was like, well, you know, I've got three kinds of meat on here.
If so it's free, you got to put as much on it as possible.
Yeah, right? So I... You know, I put everything like that I wanted on there, all this meat, and then I was just like, okay, spinach, because I have like 4 different kinds of meat. Alex is like,
spinach is delicious.
She's like, one vegetable? I was like, well, there's 4 kinds of meat. I feel like that's the good ratio. Like, and then we ate an entire fucking pizza. Nice. Alex was like, I can't believe we just ate a whole pizza.
Like, how do you guys like not normally like between the two of you? Like, I could do that by myself.
Yeah. Large. Yeah. Domino's? Jesus, that's amateur.
A tiny pizza. Yeah, go to Pizza Hut and get the large.
I could eat a fucking Vinny's.
Oh god.
Dude, that Vinny's is
good. When I was in the Navy, we had a pizza place just right outside the gates to the base, but we were in there one day, me and this friend, and we were drinking and eating pizza and hanging out and just doing our thing. And as we were leaving, he realized that they make a 4-foot by 4-foot pizza.
Oh, like the old Domino's Bigfoot pizza.
Yeah. They cut in squares.
Yeah. And he was like, it was hilarious though, because he was like, you know what? We just finished the PRT and we don't have another PRT for like 6 months. He's like, I'm going to order one of those and I'm going to eat it by myself. And deuces. I was like, you are sick. You're a sick man. There's something fucking wrong with you. Yeah. I want to watch.
Yeah.
And so he did. On like a Friday night, he ordered this like 4-foot by 4-foot pizza, called a bunch of fucking people over, got this pizza there, and then proceeded to just sit and eat it by himself. Everybody was like, well, are you going to share? He's like, no. This event was just so you could watch.
We thought there'd be pizza. Well, go buy it yourself.
That fat fucker sat, and it took him like 2 days, but he ate that whole fucking pizza.
It would have been more impressive if it was in one sitting.
It would have, like, there was no way, though. There's no way a single person...
I'm just looking forward to hanging out.
I think we can just call him now. All right, ready?
Shh. Stow it.
God. You gotta use...
Perfect timing.
You gotta use better methods, yo.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Russ.
Oh.
You're on with the Tales of the Con.
Hi.
This is Chris. I'm also here with Fred. Say hi.
Yep, Fred.
And Jake.
Hello.
And Mariana.
Hey, how you doing, Fred? How you doing, Jake?
Doing well, good.
I'm well.
How you been?
I'm okay.
How was... Did you go to what was that, Alien Con, or was that the Stan Lee Con that you went to?
I went to both.
You went to both. How was it?
It was fun. It was fun. I mean, Bob Picardo did show up to our the Stan Lee one.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, we're very grateful when Bob can do that, you know, because he doesn't have to.
Right.
So, and after, that was like at, what, I guess like 10 in the morning on Saturday. And then right afterwards, I then took a flight to go to San Jose Stan Lee's events in Los Angeles. So if you know the layout and geography of California, it's, I think, close to San Francisco. So if I were to have driven up there, it would have taken maybe like 6 to 8 hours.
Oh, geez.
So
I, it's a far drive.
Yeah. So I took a drive. I mean, I took a flight. I went up there, and then our event was at 7. I made it at like 6:57.
Nice.
Because the flight, of course, Delta Airlines was delayed.
Oh, yeah. We just had someone not too long ago on their Instagram complaining about Delta.
Yeah, Delta's been screwing over a couple of people left and right, it seems.
Hmm. Yeah, Delta is, I don't know, they used to be good. And I like their snacks, but...
yeah,
that's important.
You can get the sweet ones. Like, they don't just have pretzels.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. I love their sweet ones. And that's what I got. So I kind gorged on those. However... I think it's you see, I don't blame Delta. What I do blame is LAX because they're like, I guess, redoing the tarmac.
Oh, no.
And so we had to take a bus to get to the flight, to the actual airplane.
Oh, man.
A bus. Wow.
Yes. So from our terminal.
Classy.
We took a bus to get to the plane.
And that's after navigating the human maze that is LAX.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, LAX is, it's not good. And then, of course, on the flight back, I came back the day after. It was delayed again, so be it. Now, I'm going to Kansas tonight.
Oh, geez. Man.
Wow.
You take I leave at 1:45 a.m. in the morning, which is not as bad as it sounds because of daylight savings time, which we have.
And those flights are usually empty, too, so you can kind of just kick back and have plenty of room. And
Yeah.
So basically, I leave at 12:45 a.m. if it were today, let's say. You know, but tomorrow it shifts 1 hour.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, it shifts to, I think that's what it is. I hope that's what it is. We're supposed to set our clocks behind.
It's probably
you
good
see,
to
it's
know.
It's really confusing, and, you know, I don't like daylight savings time, but hey.
Yeah. It's nice to live in Arizona.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say.
You don't have
we don't have to worry about it.
It's one of those things here in Arizona where it's just like people talk about daylight savings and it's just like, okay, cool. You have fun with that, man.
Yeah, I think you're like one of two states.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I forgot what the other one was. But there's two states that doesn't have daylight savings time. Oh, and do you know right now we got the printed copies of the comic
book. Oh, nice.
Very cool.
And they're at Tucson Comic Con. Eric Alexander, Dave Beatty, Al Sparrow, all these people that you met.
I saw that they were going down there.
And Jan.
Yeah. Quick, everybody get in the van.
Yeah, my 4-year-old had her birthday party today, so unfortunately I couldn't make it. And then we all kind of blew our budgets at the fan fest, so... Unfortunately, we can't hit the Tucson one.
And my job.
Well, guess what? Me too. Kansas.
Oh, geez. So,
yeah. They're having a blast. I'm looking at the Facebook live posts, and, you know, I see that, Ready Comics is our printer. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they delivered it to Dave Beatty yesterday.
Nice.
On his table. So it looks good, and I can't wait to get my own physical copy.
I'm sure. See,
I'm in the same boat as you guys.
We're all just waiting for the physical copy.
So that's the comic book for Occupants. And then you have the next movie coming out, The Assassin's Apprentice, correct?
Yes.
Are you guys going to do a tie-in with that one comic book-wise also?
It's an idea, and our main investor is very intrigued by that.
Nice.
So be on the lookout. Look, I was very, very happy with Dave Beatty. Very happy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's not only is he talented, but he's a very humble guy.
He is.
You know, and he always apologizes if there was a little delay, and he's very accommodating to changes that we want. And he also has some great ideas, and we incorporated those ideas into the comic book. For instance, one of the main characters does a heroic act to save another main character. I'm not going to name who is who, but it was his idea to do that. You know, originally he was just standing there, but then Dave's like, no, in a comic book, you know, you have to show emotion.
Yeah, action.
So is the comic book, so it doesn't follow the film's plot, it kind of just goes alongside it?
Yeah, during Acts 1 and 2.
Gotcha.
Oh, interesting.
Very cool.
So where can people find Occupants? What's the easiest way to get a hold of that movie?
Right now, the distributor is selling it to the territories. So, you know, I can't give a definitive answer yet, but there are screenings coming up at various festivals, including the one I keep mentioning, I'm going to Kansas.
And what festival is that?
It's the Kansas International Film Festival.
Okay.
And that it's going to screen at 2:40 p.m. Local time, their time, tomorrow. So they're flying me out there.
Nice.
And, you know, I'm very grateful they're doing that. So, yeah, that's why I'm going. And let's see, it'll be in Overland Park. I forgot what the name of the theater was. But if you go to occupantsthemovie.com, that's occupants plural, themovie.com.
Okay.
It's all there.
Oh, nice. That's good.
Very cool.
Have you ever gone to the Sedona Film Festival?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because Dave, I think, got us a free screening with the Sedona Film Festival.
Nice.
It's not 100% confirmed, you know, but it's like something to do with an event that Dave is doing, and then he brought up Occupants, and he was talking to the festival director. So, yeah, I mean, right now I'm leaving that up to Dave because I would love to do that, you know?
Yeah, that one's pretty popular.
So I would very much like to be in the Sedona Film Festival, and we'll see what happens there, so... but yeah, it's also going to screen November 11th at 10:30 p.m. Again, this is local time in Wisconsin.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I cannot pronounce this festival, and I'm going to butcher this name. Weawega.
Yeah, there's a lot of Native American names up there in Wisconsin area.
Yeah. Yes, and I apologize to anybody who...
Well, I'll tell you what, how's it spelled?
Y-A-U-W-E-G-A.
Well, there you go. Uncle Google will help with that.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck.
And by the way, I don't know, you're in Arizona, right?
Yes, correct.
Then you know what? We actually won 7 awards at the Days for Horror Film Festival.
Very nice.
And I'm happy because my lead actor and actress, they won. And I've wanted them to win for a long time. So, you know, I'm very, very happy about that. And
that's
same
great.
Thing with my editor, Emil Harris, he won. And my nice. Sound guy, Sean Fahimian, and the VFX team, Manikanda Sathyavalan, and Mark Vincent Bonafé. You see, I have to memorize all these names.
Oh, no, I totally understand that from my point of view. I have to memorize tons of names.
Yeah, definitely making those con circuits and making, like, the routes and everything and shaking hands and... kissing hands.
You have no choice.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I sometimes do butcher names, like my poor makeup artist, Alicia, and I still can't pronounce her last name. Hey, Jonas, she's probably going to say Russ, but yeah, I used to say Alicia.
Oh, geez.
I used to say Alicia, but it's Alicia. Ah. So, yeah, I'm not the best with names. But then, okay, so the reason I mention that is they're having an award ceremony in Houston, Texas, I think in mid-November.
Okay.
So, and I'm debating whether to go because, again, I'm directing a new film in early December.
Yeah.
So it's like, but we won 7 awards. So
yeah.
You see what I mean?
That's, yeah, so you kind of pulled between the two, really.
I totally understand the logistics of trying to do 2 things at once.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a good problem to have. I just... yeah, I don't know what to do. So there's that. And then in November 26th at 11 a.m., again, local time, it will be at the Fright Night Film Festival.
Oh, nice.
And that's at Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
Wow. So, yeah.
So
if you go all the way to July, it's also going to be in Vegas.
Wow, you got a big circuit
going on.
You know
what, though? We could make Vegas.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Vegas might be the one to hit.
Okay.
International Film Vegas, Festival, so. Vegas.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
So anyway, that's what's going on with Occupants. I know for sure it's screening at those venues, so that's 100% certainty.
So
if anybody's around, please come on by.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. So was Occupants, was that 100% crowdfunded?
Not 100%, but a majority of it was.
Okay.
And then we also had some private investors.
You're trying to do the same thing for The Assassin's Apprentice, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And again, a majority of it was crowdfunded, but we have private investor too.
Yeah, see, because we're trying to get on Patreon, and that's more of like a subscription-based one for recurring content. But it's so interesting to us how, you know, anybody can really kind of get started, and if your idea is good enough, you can put it out there. And if people like it, they can fund it for you. You don't have to go through the suits and wait for it to be green-lighted and stuff like that. What is your take on that whole situation in Hollywood?
Well, you know, crowdfunding is very interesting. I think it started with the Veronica Mars movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's true. I love that movie,
too. Mars, woo!
Yeah, and they raised about a couple mil.
Yeah, I think so.
It was very impressive. And I think since then, things have changed. So crowdfunding has become more of the norm, especially with independent filmmaking. And I have a love-hate relationship of it because, yes, we raise the money, but it takes a lot of mental and physical energy.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to get that. I mean, you literally have to be a door-to-door salesman or saleswoman or salesperson, I should say.
See, that was going to be a question I had is, do you have to dedicate someone just to handle that whole side of things? Because, I mean, you're already torn doing everything you need to do for the movie itself.
Oh, no, no. I did a lot of it myself. You know, I begged people. I called people. I emailed people. I begged them again and again and again until they said, you know what? Okay, I relent. Here you go. And you know, I apologize to everybody that I did that to. But, you know, that's why I have a love-hate relationship with this. You know, I'd rather not do it, to be honest with you. But it's very... you know, I guess the ends justify the means in this sense, you know, and I want to also please everybody who did contribute. So, you know, I worked very hard on whether it's the comic book. We raised, 225%. The occupancy original film was, 106%. That was Indiegogo, both of those. And then Kickstarter for The Assassin's Apprentice. And I think, you see, we originally asked for 2,500 and we got like 21,000. So I don't know. What is that?
What?
600%?
Yeah, that's a good profit margin, man.
That's what that is, yeah.
Sounds like Kickstarter's treating you nicely.
Yeah, but also... But it's not just me, though. Like, I mean, big kudos to, like, Ryan Husk, who's one of our producers. I mean, he's a producer of Star Trek fan films and films with Star Trek actors. So he has this big base of people that love Star Trek, you know. And, you know, I mean, really, he's the one who jump-started it. Yes, I did my own, you know, bit, and so did the other producer, Howard Nash, and then the writer, Paul Hickman. You know, he's the one who started this. So... We all did, but, you know, I mean, Ryan was the one that I think the impetus has started with him. And based on the momentum, you know, that's the reason we were able to keep raising money. That's what I think.
So if you wildly exceed your goals like that, how does that affect the production? Are you then allowed to do things that you kind of had on the back burner, or what does that do for you?
Yes. I mean, you can plan more elaborate shots. You can have, you know, more shoot days. In fact, we now have a third shoot day.
Nice.
I mean, this is a sizzle reel, by the way. It's not a feature film. I just want to make that clear. This is a sizzle reel meant to then, you know, get the money for the feature film. And that is why, is everybody okay there?
Yeah, that was a beer.
Mariano opened up his beer and it wasn't supposed to be that loud. And I turned down the mics and it still was crazy loud.
It's okay. But basically, you know, so... I don't know. Where was I going?
About
my bad.
doing more with more money. So
it's again. This is a sizzle reel, and this is why Robert Picardo and Marina Sirtis. Marina Sirtis is on the film. She played Counselor Troi, Star Trek: The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. So you know, I mean, they obviously have a vested interest in the feature film, in a possible trilogy, and a video game. So that's
And a video game.
And okay. So like with the video game thing. Like, you just made all of us, like, wildly happy. Yeah. We're all just like, yes, when do we get that? Like,
Well, that's a good question. You know, I meant this is definitely something. It's a pet project of the writer, Paul Hickman's.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, I want the best possible sizzle reel. So the more money that we were able to raise, the better shots that we can have. And, you know, it does help.
Oh, yeah.
So
definitely helps sell the product, yeah.
Okay, so I have a question because, like, I've just been dying to ask this, like, since we heard you were coming on the podcast that, you know, I'm a creator of this website and stuff, and, you know, you get to direct movies, and, you know, I get to follow my dreams, you get to follow your dreams, but what really, like, inspired you, like, made you passionate, like, what movies, comics, films, what made you want to, like, really go after it?
Yeah, it's two words, John Williams.
Nice. Mm.
Composer John Williams, also known as Johnny Williams in his younger days.
The soundtrack to all soundtracks.
Yeah, it's a film music, basically, and I can feel it. It's not just John Williams. It could be James Horner, Jerry Goldsmith, Danny Elfman. I can keep naming them, but music for me is kind of like the cohesive glue. When I heard the Superman theme,
oh man,
it was very young. Yeah, I mean it's epic. It's heroic. You could feel the love in it. I mean, it's something about it. It's just really, really well done. Of course, Star Wars, and he's done like Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones, Harry Potter. This guy's done quite a lot. So, So basically, it was film music that began this journey for me, and it's because of film music that I'm doing what I'm doing right now. So.
I know
you have to forgive me. I there's a dog that keeps barking at my door.
Oh, that's so okay.
I know this is a radio interview, but
oh, man.
It seems I have a dog with me.
We actually have a dog right here in the studio. He's fast asleep, though, luckily. You say about music and movies, and that's pretty interesting because, watching documentaries and whatnot about older films like Star Wars, where the original cut of Star Wars, when it was screened, they were like, I don't know about this. But then when they scored it, when John Williams went in there and just had at, it totally changed the film.
And yeah, I mean, John Williams was recommended by Steven Spielberg.
Uh-huh.
Basically he's like, yeah, he's this guy, John Williams, he did great for my film Jaws. He did a great job, so I think you'll like him.
Another movie that...
George Lucas originally wanted classical music, like Stanley Kubrick's 2001. Mm. That was the original idea, which is ironic because 2001 was originally going to be an original score by Alex North.
Oh, wow.
Which was rejected.
I know another...
If I'm not mistaken. So, this is the exact opposite. But obviously, John Williams' music set the tone for Star Wars. And I think one reason Star Wars is so popular now is because of John Williams.
Well, actually, it reminds me of something very interesting, and I love how much you're talking about like the scoring of films and everything, and talking about film music. One of the things that I loved about George Lucas is that you watch the special features from Episode One, and there's a scene in there where they're sitting in there screening Episode One, and it's during the pod race scene, and George Lucas makes the comment that nobody is going to care about any of this once it comes to the movies. All they're going to care about is the soundtrack.
Yeah, well, I meant John Williams, I think, did a spectacular job on all seven movies, and I'm very happy he's scoring Episode Eight, and I hope he scores Episode Nine. I really do. But yeah, I mean, John Williams, I mean, you listen to Duel of the Fates if you're talking in the Phantom Menace, The Pod Race.
We had,
yeah, I mean, it's a very, 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 he's good.
We had,
in high school.
Yeah, we had many a backyard sword fights with Duel of Fates playing in the background
just
during high school.
Blasting out of a boombox. Exactly.
Inevitably, one kid would always run around from like wherever or jump off the roof of something and be like, I'm the bad guy. Like
the music made you feel tougher than you really were.
And then until you got hit.
Yeah, it was all fun and games until somebody actually got whacked with a stick. And then it was like, okay, I'm done.
You better be guys with a stick and not an actual lightsaber.
Yeah, thankfully. Yeah. We'd all be just limbless here.
Okay, I have
practice
a question
lightsabers.
Because we're getting onto the Star Wars subject, which is always one of my favorite subjects. I know you follow us on Instagram, so you've seen me with the trooper helmet on. You've seen me.
Yes.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Out of the films, everyone's got a favorite. Which one is yours?
The Empire Strikes Back.
Yes!
Word.
Sorry, I got way too excited for that. That's my.
should I have said Attack of the Clones?
No.
No. So long as you don't say Phantom Menace, then you just hear a click and that'd be it. Oh, jeez. Another movie that I was thinking about that really benefited from having a great score is Back to the Future.
My gosh. Alan Silvestri?
Yeah, that's a. That was like almost a comedy, and they said, no, let's score it like it's a serious film. And that totally changed how it's viewed and how it resonates with the audience.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Oh my gosh! I mean, you listen to like Back to the Future 2 and the hoverboard chase sequence.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's a great.
It's just like wow. Without that music, I mean, it'd be like okay.
It'd be almost corny without the music. Yeah. Really, if you think about it.
Yeah,
I love that movie though.
What do you think of
the trilogy?
Okay, what do you think of the fan theory that Marty dies during all of the movies, and every time Doc shows up, that's him showing up to save Marty's life? Have you heard that fan theory?
No, I
have not heard that.
Okay, so I read this whole ridiculous fan theory on Reddit the other day about how in Back to the Future and Back to the Future 2, that every time Doc is showing up to like pull Marty out of the fire, that's because Marty died in a previous deal, and Doc's, you know, like, oh, come on, Marty, you just died. Like...
So Doc's going back to screw with the timeline after Marty dies.
Yeah.
That's hilarious to me, and it draws so many parallels.
Isn't that exactly what happens when he decides not to do the drag race at the end of, what is it,
Number three.
Okay, yeah.
That's why I agreed with this fan theory.
That's exactly why, yeah. Because
you just spoiled the movie.
Dude, if somebody has not seen the movie yet.
30 years, sorry, folks. You had your
Too
chance.
Soon. Too soon.
You know what's funny, though? Maybe Doc did change the timeline because the Cubbies finally won in 2016.
That is true.
That is weird. I mean, it would have been really amazing if it happened last year, but still, the fact that they got it so close.
Yeah, I was very very happy. Yeah, I was happy that at least, you know, some predictions came sort of true. I mean, I still want a real hoverboard.
I'm excited about that holographic shark.
But it only
shark.
Works on metal surfaces. Yeah.
Yeah. Hendo?
That's not the same.
Yeah.
Hendo, right?
Yeah, that's the one.
I think so, yeah.
And it's like $10,000. So yeah, I mean.
Right. You want one? You can just go to like a skate shop, buy it, pay like what you would pay for a skateboard, and just be like, "All right, I'm on a hoverboard now. Screw it." Would you the hot pink skateboard or the hot pink hoverboard?
Sure. Replace a car.
Wait a minute, though. Remember that hoverboard, that pink hoverboard, was originally a hover scooter.
Yeah, but
it was a hover scooter and it was a little girl's scooter.
Or was it a hover scoot and skate?
We got to petition Mattel.
Yeah,
that's true. They're the ones that made it.
That's it.
That's right.
Maybe they need to get that crowdfunded.
So, Russ, what can you tell us about the new movie then, Assassin's Apprentice? What's the tagline? What's the big sell?
Well, the big sell is there's this apprentice, and she has to go on one final mission in order to become a full-fledged assassin. Now, she is not prone to following protocol, and that's what makes it interesting. So we got a stunt actress named Tara Page.
Oh, yeah. I read about her on IMDb the other day.
IMDb, Wikipedia. Heck, she has a Wikipedia page.
Yes, she does. She has done a lot.
She's done a lot, and she's very, very good. So we're incorporating her specialty, which is parkour and gymnastics. And we're
That's
using that, you know, to basically demonstrate her assassin's skills.
Makes sense.
And what happened is she has to terminate, I guess, a drug lord, and that's her final assignment. Of course, and I can't spoil it, but not everything goes to plan.
And hilarity ensues. No,
it's partially hilarious. Yeah,
nice.
That's good.
Oh, depends on how much you like gore.
Well, yeah. So you said that you're putting together the sizzle reel. So what? Tentatively, what are you looking at for release date on that?
March 2017.
Nice.
If you go to my production site, russm.com, russem. MSMary.com, you'll see a link to the Kickstarter page, and basically all the deliverables have to be done by March 2017. So
I'm just gonna throw this out there. You should put a link to that on your Instagram, because I follow you on Instagram, and that would be awesome.
Yeah, we'll link it up on the site, of course. When the podcast goes up, we'll put those links up. But yeah, Instagram. Okay. How deep into Instagram have you gone? Because we've gotten incredible results just spreading the word on Instagram. What do you think of social media, and what's your favorites?
Again, it's a love-hate relationship because it takes more work, but at the same time, you get more results too. So a lot of the money that we raised, like through Kickstarter and Indiegogo, it's because of social media. And that's kind of, you know, we live in a blessed time. in that sense of the word, that, you know, basically you can be connected to pretty much everybody in the world. Kind of like the Matrix.
It's true.
Yeah. Kind of like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We're connecting to people.
We're connecting by, you know, by Skype, right?
Yeah.
And it's something that 20 years ago I could not have imagined, you know.
We're living in the future.
Amazing. Yeah, it's weird.
Wow, this is that. Remember the Johnny Mnemonic film?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Remember he was holding an amazing whopping 320 gigabytes? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, so geez. I just bought a 4 terabyte drive for like $130.
They have a micro SD that's like 2 terabytes now.
Yeah, my phone supports a freaking 2 terabyte SD card.
The LG phones are like the only ones that can take that.
That's insane. Could you imagine if that little tiny chip gets lost? And it's like, that's just so much data. It's just gone.
It's kind of hilarious, though. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
it is crazy to think about, like, though, how much the price of memory has dropped, even in the last 10 years. I know, like, 10 years ago, I bought, like, a 60 gigabyte, like, thumb drive, and it was almost $60. I was paying almost $1 a gig for storage, mm-hmm. and now it's, like, those prices. Like, if I wanted a 60 gig thumb drive now, I'd go pay $4.
Yeah, and you find it at a gas station.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I have a USB stick that holds 128 gigabytes.
Nice.
And I'm just storing some files on there and taking it with me to, you know, Kansas. And I'm, of course, taking my laptop. So, I mean, it's amazing, you know, what technology can do. And I'm sure 128 gigabytes is not a lot anymore, you know, but it's what I have.
Well, I'm sure it helps you, too, with just distributing the movie itself. The fact that we have these connections and these streaming services and ways to digitally download movies, we don't necessarily have to wait for it to come out on VHS or what have you, you know? Well, you could just hit a button and it's there.
But that actually brings up, like, something that's kind of interesting if you watch, like, how, like, you think about, like, when you were little and a movie would hit theaters mm-hmm. and then how long it would take from that movie to go from theaters to VHS.
Usually took about 2 years.
And sometimes.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Sometimes longer.
But it's amazing that, like, so many directors now are shooting digital and, like, a movie will hit theaters and then they'll stop playing it in theaters and then, like, a month later the DVD will drop.
Mm-hmm.
And that turnaround time is just amazing. But a big part of that is, again, because of the evolution of the technology and the fact that, like, a lot of people have switched to that digital medium.
Yeah.
Which Star Wars did not.
No.
They shot on film.
77 millimeter.
The original did, and the latest one did, but the prequels were all digital, and they're locked in at 1080p.
Yep.
So you can't watch them in 4K.
Well, wasn't the first one shot on film?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Phantom Menace
was
shot on film.
You know what? I think you might be right. I know that Attack of the Clones
was not.
And I think maybe the third one was
that
not.
That was probably just due to how much CG they had to do.
Oh, God, the sheer amount of CG.
Dude, you know what sucks about that? And I'm just going to go on like a brief little rant here.
Is this the thing where we're all mad about that lightsaber fight?
Okay, so I have a two-part. Now you have to bring that up. So I have a two-part thing that I'm mad about.
Strap in, Russ.
Is one, so fucking much CG. And two, they're supposed, like, all leading up to the movie, there was all this shit all over the internet that there was going to be, like, what, like a 10-minute?
It was supposed to be, like almost a 12-minute
lightsaber fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan. So those two things, like when I went to the theaters and it was like, I was like strapped in, I had my popcorn, my soda, I was all ready for this like long lightsaber fight, and then it was just boom, over. Boom, I was over. Like, what the fuck?
No, not the 10-minute lightsaber fight, but the lightsaber fight was them jumping around and using the force to destroy the background.
Yeah, but
in
terrible,
CG.
We actually... Actually, when the movie was pre-release, they were touting the fact that it was going to have the longest on-screen fight scene in a movie in history. And then when the movie came out, the technical difficulties that they encountered while they were trying to go back and rotoscope all their lightsabers and all the effects from the environment, and they just couldn't do it.
Hmm.
There you go.
And so, yeah, we actually didn't get the lightsaber fight we wanted.
What do you think, Russ?
No, I mean, look, and this is the thing, even a big blockbuster films, you know, they run into a lot of these issues. I mean, look at The Matrix Reloaded. Mm-hmm. Some of the scenes, you know, I call it video game Neo.
Yep.
It looks like a cartoon. because he was a CGI character in some of the shots, not all of it. You know, I mean, you could see what they were going for, and my God, if they had pulled it off, oh wow!
It was just about 20 years too early.
Yeah, technological hurdles.
It was too much. It was too much for all these, and it's not just one visual effects house they hired. They're hiring like I don't know dozens of them. You look at the credits, so. You know, ILM, I mean, they're great, but, you know, I mean, I applaud George Lucas. He pushes, you know, the boundaries, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, the prequels may not be the best, but he's trying to expand the universe, you know. He has pretty good ideas. I mean, some of them are not good, but, you know, he has some other really, really great ideas. Like, for instance, you're talking about, like, let's say Boba Fett, right?
Oh my God!
How he tied it to Jango Fett, who then is the template for the clone army, who then become the stormtroopers, and it's just like I kind of like that. You know, there's something like that that you know I think it's kind of fascinating. So I don't
like that as well. Fred is not of that opinion.
Okay. So I have a quick question. This is not like I actually do like the whole kind of Jango Fett storyline. I do like that, but did you ever read the comic books, Russ?
I haven't read all of them.
Okay, so in the comic books, Boba Fett hates stormtroopers, and for good reason. They all are fakes, like
of him. He's the real one.
Yeah, he feels like he's the real one, and now they call this Legends canon, which blows. But I don't know if you knew that or not. So I'm just kind of putting it out there, like. The expanded universe from the Dark Horse comics back in the day, that was why Boba Fett hated stormtroopers. And then I do just want to point out that Boba Fett had like less than 5 minutes of screen time, and then he did die screaming, so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was a very nice roller scream.
The one thing that Lucas... Yeah, right.
I think that's going to be, like, probably one of the best sound bites we have is your Boba Fett impression.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
The one thing that that Lucas did do that you know with the prequels and all the crazy over the top special effects, you know, is that he did kind of inspire future directors, you know, directors at least out there after those movies to try different things and improve upon those technologies too.
Yeah, I agree.
So you saw some cool stuff.
Lucas is he's a visionary. I think he's a really good storyteller. As a director, I have a different opinion, but as a storyteller, you know, and he's definitely thinking franchise, and I think that's very commendable. You know, there's a reason why he's has $4 billion, or that's how much he sold his company for.
Yeah. Can we get into the nitty-gritty? Because, like you said, you have a different opinion as a director. Yeah, I really want to know. Like, I'm completely super, peaked. Like, I want to know.
He did what was called result direction. You know, there's this classic line he said to Carrie Fisher, faster and more intense. That's the direction he gave her. Now, you don't want to give your actor what's called result direction because they're like, oh, okay, but why? You know, they want to know why am I doing this, right?
Right.
And you want to be able to tell them what's the motivation, you know. Why you want it to be faster and more intense. You just say it's faster and more intense. They're going to try it, but it may not come across as very natural.
I think the motivation was because Carrie Fisher wasn't wearing a bra the entire time. And George Lucas made her do that.
Yeah, there's a famous thing in one of her interviews that, you know, he told her, oh, yeah, in space they don't wear bras. And it's like, oh, really?
And she went with it.
Yeah, well, she, yeah.
Well, she did wear a metal one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's see, true.
Thank later you. On, they rectified that.
Right, when there was no other choice.
Like, well, what can we do for this scene? Because we did start this movie as more of, like, aimed at, like, a broader audience. And they're like, well, we kind of have to put a top on her.
Dad and cinnamon buns.
The Cinnabon. Yeah. Those are classic.
I don't know if you've listened to our Comic-Con podcasts, but there's some talk of Cinnabons in that too.
Well, remember the one was in Spaceballs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The Daphne Zuniga's character, she's like, it's her. She's listening to music. I love them.
Their headphones, yeah.
I like Spaceballs, by the way. I think it's a great homage. I wish they would do Spaceballs too.
Have they come out with that on Blu-ray? Have they retouched that and put it out in HD?
I don't know if they did that.
I haven't seen that in a long time, and I'd love to grab that on Blu-ray.
Oh my god,
that would be nice if they do that. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, but yeah, I mean, it was just such a great parody. And you know, the Schwartz. Who doesn't want the Schwartz? So you just have to open up a Cracker Jack box and you find the Schwartz.
Yep, there it is.
Found it.
They keep talking about making a prequel or a sequel to it.
Yeah, they do. That keeps bouncing around. I hear it all the time, and it's like, okay, well, when?
Yeah, Mel Brooks is running out of time. You know,
one of the funny things I do notice, we do the con circuit, and last year at Phoenix Comic Con, there was quite a bit of Spaceballs cosplay that I was really like digging, because like it was cool to see it like brought back. Because I think I saw that movie the first time when I was like 12, and at first I was like kind of salty, but then I like. Because I was a 12-year-old, you know, I loved Star Wars.
How dare they insult Star Wars?
But then, like, I started watching it, and then, you know, John Candy just, like...
Yeah, John Candy in that movie.
He steals that movie.
Oh, yeah, dude, he's great. And then, I don't know.
Big fan of yogurt.
It was a good movie. Like,
start to finish, that's a fantastic
yogurt movie. The wise, yogurt the brave. No, just plain yogurt.
Just plain yogurt.
Yeah, what was that? Was it... can I say it to the word, the a-hole word?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You've been cursing up a storm
already. You can say anything you want. We're a podcast.
He's like, it's like, where are you shooting? Who is he? He's an asshole. I know he's an asshole. What's his name? Well, that is his name. Philip Asshole.
That's one of my favorite scenes in that movie, especially when he's like, I'm surrounded by assholes.
Keep firing, asshole.
Dark helmet.
Yeah.
How many of you are assholes?
Was it jamming the radar?
Yeah.
Raspberry jam.
I liked the whole scene. Like, that movie is just full of like fantastic scenes. And the sad thing is that they've stolen those and reused them in other films. The whole scene in the movie where they're sitting there and they're watching the movie of the film.
Yeah, the fourth wall break where they look back at the camera and what time is this now? No, it's now. And just like they keep looking back and forth.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. When?
Oh, man. That was great. That's VHS too, by the way.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh, yeah, that movie, I tell you, it's like even the Star Trek jokes, you know, when was it Snotty?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Beam the president. Yeah. Should I have Snotty beam you down, sir? And he goes, "Is it safe?" He goes, "Oh yes." Snotty beam me twice last night.
You know wonderful. What? You know what? I'm gonna have to go home and sit down and watch this movie again, because we're just bringing up things, and like I'm thinking about all kinds of like fantastic scenes, like the whole Mr. Radar versus Mr. Coffee thing, and like.
I'm gonna bring in a Star Trek. Here's another Star Trek reference. Remember the guy who was combing the desert?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Tuvok.
Yep. And
the one guy. The guy with Tim the Afro Russ. Pick.
Yeah. That was Tuvok. That's Tim Russ.
Yeah, and then he was in one of the Star Trek movies too, wasn't he? He played or was that just the flashback episode on Voyager?
It was flashback on Voyager.
Okay.
Then he was part of the Excelsior crew.
That's right.
I think right before Star Trek VI.
These guys are all giving me a look. Jake watches Star Trek like I do, but I mean, I am like, I was big on Star Wars.
Yeah.
I like both.
I like both too.
I'm the same way. I
watched The Next Generation. I have every episode on VHS.
My favorite is Deep Space Nine.
At one point,
Deep Space Nine is cool.
At one point, and I don't know what prompted me to do so. I can only say it was likely psychosis, but I sat down and watched nonstop, back-to-back, every episode of TOS, Next Gen, and Deep Space Nine.
Oh, I started that.
And that took me, like, that was, like, and I didn't watch anything else. I didn't get on the internet. I didn't do anything but watch Star Trek. It took me 3 months.
Nice.
God. Oh, no.
That's exactly the reaction.
I started that whole debacle. He called me up late one night, and he said, "What are you doing?" And I was like, I'm watching William Shatner play Kirk. And he's like, "Why?" And I was like, "Well, because I don't remember any of this series like at all." So I was like, I'm just drinking beer and just running it in the background. I figure I'll catch myself up on some of this stuff. And then he's like, "I'm gonna watch the whole series." I was like, "Are you sure?" And he was like, "Yes." And then I didn't hear from him for like 3 months. Like,
See, I went through, I binge watched it all when it was Netflix, like you had to get the three discs at a time.
Oh, God.
That was when I first binge watched them. I mean, I'd seen them all aired, you know, but going back and rewatching them three discs at a time and then having to wait.
Oh. Boy. Yeah, before streaming services came on, right?
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad they did.
Or Netflix, yeah. Those were the days.
Now I can waste my time more efficiently.
I tell you.
Well, do you have anything else you want to put out there? Any plugs or addresses or anything else you want to tell the folks?
Yeah, well, again, go to occupantsthemovie.com if you want to see any news on what's happening with the film. Oh, I should bring up, so we have the comic book tie-in, right?
Yes. Right. Yeah, tell people about that in case they haven't heard about it.
Okay, so the comic book tie-in, basically, here's the feature film is about a young couple named Annie and Neil Curtis, and it's a case study of this company called the Peterson Research Institute, which we actually have a site, PRI-research.info, and you can actually see it. It's in the comic book at the last page. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, it's Case 831, and it's about a young couple. She's a documentarian. They do this like raw vegan detox diet, 30-day kind of like test, I guess, and they set up cameras all over their house. While they're doing it, they capture a parallel version of themselves on the footage.
Oh, wow.
And at first they can only see it, but then you're able to interact, and it becomes, you know, kind of with horrific results. So it's, you know, and we won there's a horror film festival called Treekfest. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the top festivals for horror, and we won the best sci-fi feature award at that festival, which opened up a lot of doors.
You let me hold that award, and I just thought to myself, oh dear God, don't drop this. Why did someone hand me an award?
You're the one who took it. Just kidding.
So that's where that went.
Strikes again. Busted.
So, I mean, it's a psychological terror film. Now, the comic book tie-in, what it does is there's a video, testimonial videos that you see in the film, and it extrapolates on that.
Oh, that's
cool. We look at one of the cases that you see in the film, Case 285, and that's what the comic book is about. It's another case study of somebody who did see a parallel universe.
Oh, that's cool.
And the Peterson Research Institute sends two of their top people to go find out if it's connected to Case 831. So that's what's going on there. And what happens is they inadvertently open up a portal to Parallel Universe 2. So there's a second parallel universe that we established in the comic book.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, it's a much in a comic book, you can go really bombastic and, you know, have like explosions and battles. So that's what we have, you know, something that it's, you know, for budgetary constraints, we couldn't do on the first film. Now, the reason I bring up Parallel Universe 2 is because Julia Cameron, the writer of the first film, well, we commissioned her to do the second film. And because there's been a lot of interest.
So yeah,
there's been a lot of interest. Yeah, there is a sequel.
Fantastic.
And she's writing it as we speak. And it's going to incorporate the comic book. It's going to canonize the comic book.
What?
So, oh, man.
That's so cool. Just,
now we're all like going to have so much like nerd fuel. Yeah,
here's the thing. Like, I'm a huge Doctor Who fan. So like, anytime someone's talking parallel universes and paradoxes and that sort of shit, I'm just like, yes, give me all of it.
well, I will tell you this. You know, it's definitely – I believe in the multiverse theory, it's called. So there's a lot of possibilities, like Doctor Who.
Infinite
or Sliders or Fringe, or you can name it. You can go on and on. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of potential.
Fringe is and,
really good. Oh, Fringes. I just binge watched Fringe.
Nice.
And, you know, I mean, you know, when you have Walter Ned or you know, Bolivia, or they assign these really funny names to these people.
It's that
really
show was so cool because it started out almost a little different than how it wound up. You know, like towards the end of the season one, you're like, oh, this is what the show is about.
I've only seen the first season.
And then I watched all of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they have this one kid, I don't want to spoil it, that becomes, there's a kid that they find in one of their cases in the first season, and he becomes very pivotal in the last season.
Nice.
Very cool.
Yeah,
which I thought was a really good tie-in.
Yeah, because I haven't seen it, so now I'm like, okay, I gotta go binge watch this whole freaking series.
Oh, go back and watch Sliders too. I like that show. It doesn't quite hold up, but
no, that's something that, like, if you want to go back and you want to sit through and rewatch Sliders, which I've recently in the last year I've done. It's one of those series that, like, for the time that it was out, it was great. But, like, now it's like, okay. So you kind of have to view it through, like, that lens of, like, oh, great. Like, almost 15 years have passed since this aired.
More so. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, it had a lot of potential, but it ended up in a very... It didn't end very nicely.
No, it kind of went off the rails.
But it started very well. I mean, it had, Gimli or Sala.
Yeah, I forget the lead.
Jonathan Rhys-Davies.
I forget the name of the lead on that, but like Sliders was the whole reason why I love the movie Joe's Apartment, that's a movie that still holds up.
Oh, yeah, the same actor. Yeah. Oh, geez, what is his name?
Oh, dude, I'm spacing.
Isn't it
right
Jerry
now.
O'Connell?
Yes. Thank you for rescuing us.
It's like, would you like to buy a lifeline?
Yeah. Can I phone a friend?
Oh man.
Well, I almost said Jonathan Rhys Meyers instead of Jonathan Rhys Davies.
Big difference.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just gonna call it Gimli or Sala.
That works.
But he was great. You know, the professor on the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they killed him off or something. It's like, and after that, I don't know, it just veered.
It all went.
It went off the rails. Yeah, sideways. Then, yeah. He was a bigger character than I think they realized.
Yeah, he was really like pivotal to the like whole story. If you think about, like, he was my favorite character on the show, and I didn't know who he was or anything. I just liked him whenever he was on screen because he just made Jerry O'Connell's character feel like an asshole. Like, you did what? And it was like, well, this guy obviously knows more than the guy who built the fucking tube to slide through multiverse. Like,
let me ask you this though: there was an episode where they found what they assumed was home, and it was like everything was down to like the last 99.9% perfect, but that squeaky gate. I think that was their home, and I think they kept going because that stupid squeaky gate. He's it's supposed to squeak, and it didn't squeak. And it's like
they've been gone for like what, a year, 2 years.
Yeah, someone didn't hit it with WD-40.
Oil it. Yeah,
it's just been open.
And that was in like
season two. That's right. I remember that episode now. Now that you mentioned the squeaky gates,
I think that was the home.
It bothered, right? The main character.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's it bothered. He's like, no, this isn't our universe. I don't know. You know. Here's the thing, though, and this is the thing. Like Back to the Future, it's like, honestly, if you think about it, at the end of the first film, Marty, that it's not his universe.
Yeah, that's true.
He's not literally living alive.
Yeah, some other Marty's universe that, like, his timeline had been destroyed.
Yeah, Doc just didn't show up to save him. No.
Yeah, because they explain that in the movie when Doc does it on the chalkboard and he's like, no, here's where it splits off and now it's this universe. Yeah. And it's like, well, yeah.
That's the principle of time travel, is once you go, you can never get completely back.
Because you change something.
You can get close, but you're always in a universe that's just a little bit different.
Yep.
Because unfortunately,
it may not be recognizable, but it's different.
Unless you can change, that's the problem. By entering into a different, I guess, dimension or the time, you right there, you just affected it right there. Yeah. So there's just no way to go back to what was original. It's not possible.
Exactly. But this kind of actually, I was going to say that kind of actually brings up like a very interesting point about interdimensional travel, which is that, like, so if you change the timeline, right, and you go back to your time and now it's this altered timeline and everything, what happens when the other Marty comes back?
Right. Exactly.
Because you're a second individual from a completely different timeline, right. And now you've altered a timeline and you're going into it, but you're not the original Marty from that timeline.
Right. Because like Marty was supposed to die but didn't.
Right. It's so like what happens there. In Time Cop. They just like turn into a bowl of Jello.
Yeah, or you could doctor it and they just like phase out of reality to another dimension.
Okay, for 1994, that was pretty good CGI. For 1994.
Yeah.
I love that train.
That's the caveat. But no, think about it. Like, he went into the future, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How could there be an older Marty?
Exactly.
Yeah, what happened to the Marty? Yeah, because to everyone else back in that timeline, Marty just vanished.
Right.
Poof.
Yeah.
Yeah, because time is still going.
Right, he went to another universe where that Marty didn't die.
Have you heard the theory that the flux capacitor, like, its whole purpose is to make sure that, you know, certain events happen? Like, that's why the car stalls when it does.
So the flux capacitor is akin to, like, the TARDIS being in Doctor Who?
Exactly. Yeah, it's like the core on the TARDIS. Like, so that's why the car stalls, because if he took off at, when the timer went off, he would miss and he wouldn't have gone back in time.
Huh, that makes sense, I guess.
That's interesting. That's actually very interesting.
You brought up a fan theory I didn't
that's
know.
That's an interesting theory. Does that mean that, like, time travel in those, like, weird fictional universes is only possible by piggybacking off of another sentient being that exists outside of time? Because that's how it happens in Doctor Who.
Yeah, why not?
That's crazy.
Why not?
Holy shit.
That makes sense to me.
As long as we're making stuff up, why not?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
That's funny. No, I have unfortunately, when you deal with time and when you retcon something like Star Trek Enterprise did in the prequels and everything, it's never going to be 100% smooth, you know?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
And that's unfortunately, that's the case. It can never be 100%, I guess, accurate. So, you know, I'm going to bring up the Star Wars prequels again. You know, he had to then, what I guess, also change the original trilogy, right, to fit it together.
Yeah, with the special editions, he added a few things here and there. And
started. Well, talking about that, I didn't realize that Ewoks never blinked.
Yeah,
that's true.
Right. Yeah, because they have masks.
Soulless eyes, like a doll's eyes.
Because they wear doll's eyes.
So, you know, I mean, and, you know, obviously when Han Solo says to Jabba the Hutt, you know, Jabba, you're a wonderful human being. Well, he actually was a human being.
Yeah, he was. I saw that deleted scene with that actor, and that was different.
It was different. It's a different take on Jabba. And now he's, I guess, saying that as a sarcastically.
Yeah, that whole scene, when they re-added, when they added the CG version of Jabba the Hutt, and he does that awkward, like, step over his tail and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so uncomfortable to watch because it's like, you know, there's so much, though, that, like, I wish they'd have just left the originals alone, because there's so much that when they went back and re-edit it, like that whole Han shoots first thing.
Thank God.
That is hard to watch. I cringe because of, like, how bad that's cut together.
It is. Do you remember in the special edition in 1997 when Luke is falling down, when Bespin, he was falling down?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, after he got his arm chopped off.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
And then they had a scream.
Oh, they added that Wilhelm scream, didn't they?
They're like, as he's, like, going down. And
yeah.
No, he didn't do that. But they added that scream, and then everybody was, like, laughing. It was so silly. So then Lucas took it out.
It was over the top.
Yeah.
It was very over the top because, you know, I mean, he's just, like, going down, and he's resigned to, I guess, his death. That's how I was, like, interpreting
that. He already let out that ridiculous,
yeah, he'd rather die than be Vader's son, I guess.
Right, so why scream again? Right.
He was already all screamed out.
Yeah.
Well, he probably was, or maybe he was in shock because he's losing blood.
That too.
That's true.
Well, no, because lightsaber
they cauterized the wound.
Not in episode four.
Yeah, that's true. Not in episode four. In the bar scene when
that's right, blood goes everywhere, doesn't it?
Yep.
Huh. Maybe that guy had some weird space arm that, like,
maybe was a space arm. Well, he was an alien, so maybe his blood was different.
Maybe.
You know, body composition makes a difference.
My friend doesn't like you.
If he's not a carbon-based life form, if he's a silicate-based life form, he'd burn differently.
See, now you're really going
nerd.
Now you're really going down the fan theory
nerd rabbit hole.
He might not burn at all. Silicate's got a really high melting temperature.
I don't think that guy was silicate. He looked a little too squishy.
I do like the fact that with Ian McDiarmid, he was finally young enough to play Senator Palpatine.
Right.
And he required pretty much no makeup or prosthetics or anything. And I always thought that was amusing because I guess he was like 37 or something when he played Emperor Palpatine in Return of the Jedi. So then, you know, flash forward, and he's 55 and he's now young enough to play Senator Palpatine. So there you go.
Jeez.
I thought it was funny. And I'm sure he had the most fun in Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Where he finally gets turn evil.
He's probably like, Lucas, thank you. It took you, 20 years, but I finally get a lightsaber.
Yeah, that scream that he lets out when he jumps at the Jedi, though, that was a little odd. The way he screams and flies at them, and it's
Well, I think that's because he uses his force powers to, like, enhance his saber fighting.
I think it would have been better if he just stood up and lightning bolted all three of them.
Yeah, that would be pretty sick.
Boom!
Suck it, nerds.
Yeah, that would have been good.
Yeah, but, you know, I think George is like, you know what, I feel so bad for you, and you didn't have anything, no lightsaber fight, so I'm going to give you this, and you could flip and do all that wonder, you know, crazy stuff. Right. But, you know, it's kind of funny how in the original trilogy, they don't do any of that. Of course, we know why.
Right, right.
You know, CGI, not in its infancy, well, even, I guess they did CGI on Tron, or, I mean, it was very...
They did very much in Star Wars.
Original Tron was a lot of rotoscoping.
Like all the ships in Star Trek and Star Wars were models.
Right, until Voyager, yeah, and then they were CG.
Right, yeah. I mean, if you want to veer to Star Trek, the first time they had a CGI model of the Enterprise was Star Trek Generations.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah. God. Watching that ship blow up was so sad. I love that ship.
Yeah. Well, guess what? Then you got to see another ship blow up in Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
It reminded me exactly like... It reminded me exactly of Star Trek Generations.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that ship. I mean, Enterprise E is okay, but I like Enterprise D.
Yeah, the E was good, but the D was better, and really the... What was it? The B. The one from the movies was probably the best.
I just love it that you're a fan of the D.
Screw you guys.
Like you said it, and Fred and I just like the giggled. The
best. I know, I was like, why are they laughing at me?
The D is the best in my opinion. Oh yeah, sure it is.
And on that note. Well, Russ, I think we'll...
Wait, one more question. Oh,
Fred's got something else. Hang on.
We asked this to all our guests.
Oh.
Because you make the con circuit. What do you think is your craziest con story?
Oh, my craziest con story?
Yeah. From, like, anything. Film festival, event, whatever.
Just a crazy story.
Well, you know, I think, you know, I don't know if it's crazy, but it was definitely surprising. It's Phoenix Comic Con.
Okay.
It was our first true test. It was our world premiere. And it just, you know, first off, it was 117 degrees. It was 117 degrees there. Actually, I have a better
story,
but I'm going to tell this one and then I'll tell that one. Okay, so it's 117 degrees. And then on that Friday, I think there was a long line and people were already cosplaying.
Yep.
I'm going, how in the world can you stand out there in 117 degree weather?
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was something. You know, I mean, I have fond memories of Phoenix Comic Con, though, because they gave us our first award. You know, I'm very grateful to them, to Jacob O'Neill and his team.
Mm-hmm.
He was the festival director at that time. So, you know, very, very good. Now, okay, Florida SuperCon. Florida SuperCon.
A Florida man headline.
Now, I love Florida SuperCon. I mean, they gave me an award for Best Director, so I love them.
Nice.
It was the Super Geek Film Festival, it was called. Unfortunately, during our – we got three screenings, right? During our first screening – right when the first Robert Picardo scene came up, the fire alarm went off.
Oh no.
What?
Oh no.
And then everybody had to evacuate. It turned out to be a false alarm, but you know, the lead actor, basically anybody went, we were on the second level, so anybody went down the escalator, they could not get back up.
Oh, okay.
So the lead actor was already, you know, went down and couldn't get back up. The producer, also, Howard Nash was down and couldn't get back up. You know, I was up there because, you know, I was just asking around what's going on, or can you, like, you know, start the film again? Or right. And the composer, Vasilis Milesis, you know, he again could not come back up. So it was so frustrating because we had a full house and then suddenly this fire alarm went off. Luckily, I was begging people to come back in and we got maybe about 95% of the audience. But it doesn't matter. It's like, you know, We had the momentum and everything, and then
yeah, there's an energy that's lost at that point. It's just like, oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, so I was kind of depressed, but then the next day, you know, Robert Picardo showed up, and then we won the award. So I was quickly happy again.
Good. It all worked out.
That first screening, I swear, I was going, why?
Just why? Bashing your head against the wall.
Yeah, that is pretty messed up. Fire alarm going on.
Yeah, it was very messed up. You know, I mean, I was just, it was just right after the Pulse nightclub shooting, which, you know, was in Orlando.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I think a lot of people thought it was something that, like, that was happening. Machine gun fire, or, you know, people were freaking out. So, you know, there was a lot of conflicting stories as to what was happening. And, you know, I mean, it was unfortunately really bad timing for, you know, for our screening, which is exactly when the fire alarm went off.
Oh,
so that's my most interesting story of the concert.
That's pretty that crazy.
Said, I love Florida SuperCon.
Sounds like we need to take him to a FAQ panel.
Yeah, are you going to be at the next, you're going to be at the next Phoenix Comic Con?
Bicycles.
I would love to be. Yeah, I would definitely love to be at the next Phoenix Comic Con.
We'll have to take you to one of the after hours panels. It's something else. We'll just put it like that.
Yeah,
it's a little later in the evening, but it is worth pure,
it's hilarious. It's debauchery.
Comedy. It is.
Oh, fantastic. I bet it is.
Oh yeah, it's a good time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I bet it is. Look, I mean, we've been to several of the cons, and each one has its different flavor. Whether it's Stan Lee's event or Phoenix Fan Fest, Phoenix Comic Con, we went to Rose City Comic Con, San Diego Comic Con. You know, the I guess the original Comic Con, as right. they call it,
the Prime.
That yeah. one was just a madhouse.
Oh man,
that
yeah.
was ridiculous.
Omega. I call it the Mecca.
I mean, it was great, but it was ridiculous. I mean, it's like to get from one end to the other, it took like 20 minutes.
Oh geez.
It's just too many people. It's 165,000 people going there.
That's
it was
almost,
a madhouse.
That's almost too big.
That almost sounds like a great
huge,
time.
Yeah.
That's where you show up a couple days early. You know what I'm saying?
And then there's no place to park. You have to park like maybe 20-30 minutes away. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know. I mean, that said though, you know, I loved it too. You know, I mean, they did accept occupants, so I'm very very grateful for that. But yeah, I mean, the different cons, every one of them has a different flavor. There's WrathaCon that I went to, you know, there's Farpoint Convention, you know, some are bigger, some are smaller. I like the smaller ones. They're more personable.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard that.
The big ones, you just get lost in the crowd.
Yeah, we've checked out a few of the smaller ones. Our big one is the local one, the Verde Valley Comic Expo, and we had a great time at that one. That was, what, 600 people? 300
people.
It wasn't too many, but it was tough.
But it was, you had great time to sit and talk with all the artists, and everybody got, you know, God, we made so many friends there.
We were there.
Were you?
Well, I wasn't, but Dave Beatty was there.
Oh, yeah. Dave was there. Yeah, in fact, Dave and Dave, his buddy Jan are the ones that got us into that. Yeah. So
Dave really is a fan of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Like a friend of the show.
Yeah.
You mean, you say Jan, you mean the Janimal, right?
Yes. The Janimal.
We all just call him
Jan. He has a cameo in the comic book.
Yeah, he what? Posted that on his that? Instagram.
Yeah.
I saw that. He's in the crowd.
Oh, that's so cool.
So
yeah, they're good guys.
Yeah, and they're right. I think they're all at Tucson Comic Con right now.
Yes,
they are.
I would love to go to. I just am going to Kansas.
Right,
so
timing.
I can't go.
Yeah, timing and.
But I would love to have gone.
Budgetary concerns.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, it is what it is. Alien Con. So we went to Alien Con. That was interesting because it was more like UFO themed, and the questions they asked were more scientific. They really wanted my take on quantum theory.
Oh,
and
geez.
I'm like, luckily I had my friend Jeff Krause and Eric Brown too. And Jeff is like head of this group called MUFON, and he's very versed in this stuff. So I'm like, wow, our specialist Jeff Krause could answer that question for you.
Perfect. You had somebody to
there,
throw
there were literally people who are actual scientists who were at our screening there. We're asking these questions, scientific questions, and I couldn't answer.
You're like, I just made the movie, guys.
I know like astronomy, and you know I follow NASA and you know the probes like New Horizons. I know that, but when it comes to actual mathematical quantum theory, I don't know, you know, and you know, I had to tell them like this was just it's a movie, and sometimes you have to stress disbelief, and sometimes you know the answer in the film it was like how can she go back and forth and through the portal, and we cannot. There was this portal that opened up, and the answer by the actress was I don't know. She just found a way. Well, that's our answer. I don't know. you know, and I leave it up to the audience to decide. So when they, yeah, but AlienCon, that was interesting. That was a very nice, that was a great event too. It was just very different. So it's like we've been to like, you know, comic cons or more scientifically oriented cons or horror festivals or just film festivals. Like the one I'm going tomorrow is an actual, you know, film festival. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's different, you know, it's, it, it, we get a different reaction.
They all have their own different feel.
Yeah, and a different group. And I think the best reaction we got was from Shriekfest because it's like a psychological terror film. So it's that the crowd of people that came, it's their puppy, if you will. They love that stuff. And I think that's why it resonated very well with that crowd.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, AlienCon, same thing. They were asking questions and they were very intrigued too. But you see, it's two different crowds. And I think that's just very... This is very fascinating.
It's nice that it's got that wider appeal, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm very grateful, you know. And now with the comic book tie-in, we have the comic book audience, you know. And then it's just very interesting. You know, I'm just very, very happy and very grateful that this film has done so well. So I hope people like Occupants, too.
Oh, sorry. We lost you for a second there. So, you said
no. I hope people like Occupants too.
Oh, there you go. That's what you said. Okay.
I'm very excited for that one. So because I loved Occupants, but I just love that film. And it started with Julia Camera, and then her script is just spectacular.
So we'll put links to all your sites and your Indiegogos and your Kickstarters and whatnot. We'll put that up on with the podcast. We'll be throwing this up on Monday. I don't think we had anything else in the pipes, so this will be up pretty quick. Do you have anything else you want to throw out there?
Yes, I'll be in Kansas.
Kansas. Godspeed in Kansas.
Shout out to the whole state of Kansas. Thank you, Dorothy.
I look forward because my father grew up in Kansas, so I'm very curious. I'm going to visit his childhood home. It's in my to-do list. And, you know, and of course, Wizard of Oz. Supposedly Superman.
Superman.
Did he grow up in Kansas?
Yep. He did. Smallville.
Yeah, so I look forward to seeing Kansas. I've never been there, and you know I'm very curious. So part of me is going as a tourist, and that's one of the reasons that I was happy that you know I was able to go to a lot of. We've been to like maybe 12 states or something with this film, mm-hmm. and I was able to visit a lot of them, like Ohio or Florida. You know, these are states I've never visited in my life, and now because of work, it I got the opportunity to do that. So I'm very curious to see what Kansas is like.
Well, now you're well traveled. we'll throw up all the links, and then we hope to check in with you later on when you're a little bit further on production for the new one, the Assassin's Apprentice.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I very much would love that.
This is fun. I can't believe it's already been over an hour. That's crazy. Yeah,
this is definitely this is for sure been a blast. Anytime you want to come on the podcast, regardless if you just want to hang.
Yeah, because our podcast is just a hang.
Loads of fun.
So anytime.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Drop us a line. All right, Russ. Okay, well, we'll chat with you later.
Okay. Well, thank you again to Tales of the Con and everybody. I really appreciated this. Thank you.
Appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you later.
Have a wonderful night.
Okay.
Goodbye, thank caller.
TalesOfTheCon.com.
Bitch.